you would say, as long as LeBron's going to be this guy that we saw through the first eight games, then obviously you have LeBron there and Anthony Davis has been spectacular.
You know what? Hold on a second. I want to start over. I don't want to start with the Lakers. I want to start with Waiters. I'm sorry. No offense, Dave. No offense. So,
all right. Let's start it all over. Shake it off. Let's go.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. Joining us from Naples, Florida, where it's the best time of year to be in Florida, Bobby, because the snowbirds haven't got there yet and the weather is gorgeous, is Bobby Marks. Hello, Bobby.
Hey, Brian. Oh, they're here. The most dangerous place in Naples is the Publix parking lot, so they've arrived. Don't worry about it.
The Canadians come first. The Canadians arrive first. This is my experience from living on the east coast of Florida. First, the Quebecers. Quebecers? Quebecians? I don't know. French Canadians come first, and then the other Canadians. Joining us from the opposite side of the country, in Los Angeles, where he's getting ready to cover the Lakers game tonight. We're taping this on Sunday afternoon, so we wish we could do it live, but that would defeat the purpose of a podcast. It's Dave McMenamin. Hello, David.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Dave.
So, all right, in my career, I have covered the story of Andrew Bynum hurting his knee bowling. And I have covered the story with Dave of J.R. Smith getting suspended for throwing soup. And now I've covered the story of Dion Waiters having a bad reaction to an edible on a flight and having what has been called a panic attack. And that's what I had to do. That's why I spent my Saturday night doing. Bobby, you've seen a lot of stuff in the NBA. I assume this is a new one for you. But I'm not going to make any assumptions, actually.
Oh, this is new. I mean, I don't think, you know, I've never seen it. You know, I guess nowadays with where marijuana is as far as the legalization of it and, you know, how it is in the forefront, you know, it wasn't like this back, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Maybe it would be a little bit different. But, yeah, I haven't seen a case like this with Waiters. I think a lot of it, Brian, has to do with kind of like the back history here too, right? You know, the suspension to start the year, has been cleared to play, has not, you know, has been active, but not on the bench, right? I mean, I was in Miami for the Atlanta game a couple weeks ago. And you know, he's in the building, but not on the bench. So he's not even there. And now we have this incident here. So yeah, this is something new, especially for a guy that's owed, what, $25 million for this year and next year.
Yeah, so the way the story was told to me, and, you know, the Heat have declined to comment on this, and I don't think Dion's given an interview all year, unless I'm mistaken. Or not all year, but all regular season. I could be wrong, but I don't think he has. Dave, was that he was not feeling well in Phoenix. He was listed as being out for that game because of a stomach ache. Now, even if he wasn't sick, he wasn't going to play because he hasn't played yet. And he was really having some discomfort. He was looking for some relief, and he took an edible that he had never taken before that he got from somebody, and he had a reaction to it that he was not expecting and had an episode and was met by the plane. It was met by some emergency personnel when he arrived. He's fine. He's okay from what I understand. He flew back to Miami with the team on Saturday. When you first heard about this, Dave, what were you thinking?
Well, I had a couple of thoughts. One, it reminded me, you know, even though it was the Syracuse Orange where I went to the college, there was a lot of green on campus, and I had a friend who
partook. You had a friend, Bobby.
I had a friend and partook a little too much in what the greens that they're to offer there, and literally felt like he was at a party that I was at and said he thought he swallowed his Adam's apple and was losing his mind. And, you know, we had to calm him down and sequester him from the party and, you know, until he came to, basically. And obviously not being on the plane there with Dion and not knowing anything about the particulars of how strong the gummies were that he took, I've seen firsthand what that, you know, an overdose on marijuana can do to a person, just really get them out of sorts. And then it also reminded me of the Gerald Green incident, which, you know, I didn't cover, and I guess it wasn't on the list of what you covered, Brian, but, you know, just a bizarre incident involving a Miami Heat player where Gerald Green, you know, was found, you know, shouting in the lobby of his condo and had to be taken to a hospital on a stretcher. And it was never quite, you know, fully confirmed exactly what had happened to him, but there was, you know, theories at the time that it was synthetic marijuana.
Yeah, well, I remember when I covered the Bynum story, I remember Bynum gave an interview. This is, you know, he was very close to coming back, and then all of a sudden he was a late scratch. And I remember, it's almost one of the saddest things I've ever heard anybody say, but I appreciated he was telling the truth, that he had actually gone bowling and re-hurt his knee and had a setback. And he said, well, if I did this bowling, can you imagine what would have happened if I actually tried to dunk and land? And he's right. I mean, I don't think he was like sliding around the lanes on his knees. I just think it was a reminder that he had a real fragile situation. So Bobby, let me ask you this. What do you, if you're the Heat, if you're in the, you know, the Heat front office, what do you do in a situation like this? He hasn't played. He's really, I mean, no one is untradeable, but pretty toxic trade asset. You've already had him away from the team, and now he's back. What do you do?
Well, I mean, I think first from his contract, you're right, Brian. I think, you know, nobody's untradeable, but he's probably in the category of toxic contracts right now, I would say. Probably himself, Nicholas Batum, you know, guys like that. I mean, remember, a lot of these contracts that were signed in 2016 when the great spike came in are now about to come off the cap. So, you know, Waiters is part of this, 2017 class here. So, and the other thing too is that, as we mentioned, he's owed $25 million, but they've played, you know, I know they lost it to Denver and the Lakers. They've played really well, you know, and they've got this young backcourt of Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero, and now you've got Jimmy Butler, you've got Goran Dragic coming off the bench. So it's not like you need Waiters, but at the other end, you know, he can't be traded. He's kind of been brought back to the team side. But as I told an agent this, I would be stunned if we ever see Dion Waiters back on the court again, you know, in Miami. I would be really surprised just by, I guess we always talk about culture down there, right? As far as him with, you know, with the Heat culture there. So you kind of just wait it out. I wouldn't do anything with a buyout, of course, because he's owed so much money, but you just kind of play it out and you try to, you know, I guess kind of give your distance to him as far as him being part of this group here.
Yeah, it's not unlike. Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Well, just the question I have is, you know, is the chicken and the egg thing. Like, was this a one-time thing? Was his suspension somehow related to, you know, similar behavior to this? Was his behavior prompted by Miami kind of going out and recruiting above him and going after guys like Hero and Nunn? Or did Hero and Nunn shine so well in the early going because Dion hadn't taken care of himself? I just have a lot of questions about, you know, kind of where he was physically and mentally coming into this season.
Well, from what I understand, you know, he had a foot injury that he played through for a while, and ultimately could play through it no more, had surgery, and was just out an enormous amount of time with that surgery. It's not my foot. I don't know if he had setbacks or whatever, but it was just out a long time. And when he came back, he was not in good shape and basically kind of lost his leverage with the organization because not only was he out with injury, but then when he came back, he was in bad shape. From my understanding, he actually came into this training camp in pretty good shape and really had spent the offseason working pretty hard. But he arrives at training camp, and as you mentioned, Dave and Bobby, finds a loaded backcourt, and there's no place for him to play. And I think he was pretty much told, you know, in training camp, hey, you're not going to be a part of our rotation. And I don't think he liked that, and I don't think he responded to it in the best way, and that led to the suspension. But, you know, just another, you know, ultimately it's not going to probably define the season. It's not going to define this era of the Heat, but it's just a – an interesting moment in the annals of the NBA as we go through this scenario. You know, it's a kind of, they flew from Phoenix to LA. It's kind of a short flight. It's not a flight you expect to have a lot of drama on, but you know, the Heat went out. I think they had a 4-game trip and they lost 3 of the 4, or they had a 3-game trip and lost 2 of the 3, and the Sixers just went out and took quite a few on the chin. And Ben Embiid got suspended, Ben Simmons got hurt, and they lost quite a few. I think they lost 3 or 4 on that trip. We're going to see a lot of teams going west, I think, from the East this year, who have rough road trips one way or another. But both the Heat and the Sixers, who spent last week on the West Coast, West side of the league, did not have great runs.
Dave, right. One more thing regarding waiters. Yeah. Let me just jump in there. And you and Woj wrote about it too. And with his bonuses, you know, he's got that bonus in his contract, and we know he's not going to hit it, right? If he played in 70 or more games, he gets $1.2 million here, and because he's got that bonus in there, and even though it's going to be unlikely, that's a big reason why Miami's not able to go out and sign a 15th player right now, because of the hard cap, right? We've talked about the hard, they're $854,000 below the hard cap. And that waiter's bonus, which is that 1.2, is kind of holding them back a little bit. And, you know, I've talked to people around the league and got confirmation on that. And even when he doesn't, when it's deemed unlikely and he does not reach it, if it's next week, the league is not going to view that or remove that $1.2 million number towards the hard cap until after the season. So that's a kind of a – they put it in the contract when he signed it in 2017. But now it's kind of a hindrance right now.
But why? Why wouldn't they remove it?
Well, they look at it almost like a salary cap loophole, where if – is Miami holding him back on purpose – of not playing to gain additional cap, hard cap flexibility here. And of course, the waiters can, you know, they could file a grievance with the player association because of that. I think there's a lot of different ways, but from what, and I've got pretty good confirmation, is that there is no relief going to be, as far as with that bonus regarding the hard cap here.
All right. So just to recap that real quick. I'm glad you brought this up. So the reason that the Heat are hard capped is that they did a sign and trade for Jimmy Butler. So both them and the Warriors this year don't have a lot of space. There is an actual number that they can't exceed spending no matter what. And the Warriors are within 30,000 of it, right? At the moment.
They're about 375.
Oh, 300,000.
They're right there though. They're right at it.
And so Waiters has a thing in his contract that he signed years ago, three years ago now, that if he played, I think he's guaranteed $12 million this year, and if he plays over 70 games, he would get, is that $12 million inclusive of that bonus, Bobby, or is it exclusive?
The bonus is not factored in. So
okay, if he had played 70 games, which he's already missed 9, and my guess is he's not going to play for a while. So, you know, and I don't know how big of a, you know, I don't know how big of a factor that is. I see guys waive trade kickers and don't worry about bonuses all the time. I also see guys who have stat bonuses refuse to shoot threes for the last week of the season. So it varies. I don't know how much his frustration with the team is not getting that $1.2 million. Sure, it's somewhat involved, but so you're saying that even when he, you know, no longer can get that $1.2 million, no matter what, once he's missed more than, you know, once he's missed 13 games, basically, that they will not remove that from their expected books.
That is correct, because bonuses count towards the tax apron, and the league does not calculate until after the season, even though we know he's not going to hit it, but they will not calculate it until June.
Who? What's more likely to happen this year? Him to play more than 10 games for the Heat, or Nene to play more than 10 games for the Rockets?
Dave, you want to take that?
Yeah, I mean,
what is that contract, Bobby? Nene gets how much if he doesn't play 10 games, and how much if he plays more than 10 games?
Well, he signed for his base comp is $2.5 million, right? So, but it can go up to ten. He's got like $7.5 million in bonuses in his in his contract, as far as, and it's tiered based on games played. So it's like it's 10 games played, right? He gets, you know, 2.5. It keeps on going up. And, you know, when Houston originally did it, of course, it was because of, they were under the impression that they were going to be able to use the whole $10 million because the bonuses were deemed likely. Well, the league kind of stepped in and said no. And it's funny that
this is them applying the same rule two different ways. Because in Wader's case, they're saying you got to count that $1.2 million against your hard cap, even whether he can't get it. But on the Rockets, they're saying you can't count it for the $10 million in trade for Andre Iguodala because we think it's a shiesty deal. That's what they're saying.
Correct. Yeah, correct. So, but if the Rockets were hard capped, I mean, this would go towards the Nene bonuses would go towards it. But for trade purposes for his contract, he only counts at that, you know, that 2.56 number. But
this is one of the things that
I don't think we'll ever see Nene either.
General managers scream at me about the league being unfair and making up rules as they go along. But I kind of get the reporting,
Brian, of the Buddy Hield contract. This is the first time where, you know, everybody had the correct information, but it was just how it was framed, whether you found those bonuses to be likely or unlikely. And it was just interesting to see that reporting come out. It was the first kind of high-profile signing that I could remember where the reporting varied so wildly in the numbers, even though there was all correct information. It was just based on what part of the incentives did you choose to include in the total package.
Yeah, well, I've never seen anything like that Nene contract, and the league hadn't either.
Well, and the funny thing is, Brian, too, is that when I've talked to a bunch of teams about this, when we do contracts, we always send them to the league, like the rough draft, to have them like kind of rubber stamp. Just because the one thing you don't want to never do is that for a contract to come like this, you know, not approved, and then you got to go into your general manager's office and ask for another signature and be like, well, what happened? And you'd be like, well, I forgot to add something in here. And Houston never sent the Nene contract for approval. So they basically did it, had the guy sign it, and then sent it to the league for approval. And that's when it went into a holding pattern for like 2 weeks there.
Hello, no one is available to take your call.
I'm not jinxing anything, okay? But I may need to get tickets for the college football playoff the way things are going with my Ohio State Buckeyes. Just may need to do that. Or, you know, maybe before that, maybe the Big Ten championship game. Heck, maybe their game against Penn State coming up in a couple of weeks. And of course, if you need tickets to any of those big games or any of your college football favorite teams' big games, what are you going to do? You going to go there with like cash in your pocket and try to buy from a scalper? No, it's 2019. You're not going to do that. Are you going to try to use some sort of shady third party, you know, app? No, you're not going to do that. You're going to go to Vivid Seats. Because Vivid Seats is the online ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experiences that can last a lifetime. Whether you like sports or you want to see concerts or shows, Broadway, Vivid Seats is the way to go. And if you use their app, you can also use the Vivid Seats Rewards Loyalty Program. They help fans find seats in any of those favorite live events. You go right to the app, you get great prices, and this is important, an easy purchasing experience and that loyalty program. You can use those statuses ranging from MVP to Hall of Famer. You can earn up from 10 to up to 16% credit on all purchases made through that app. So here's what you do. You go to the App Store or Google Play and download Vivid Seats. You're automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards Loyalty Program. You start ordering seats. Start making discounts in the future. And of course, this goes without saying, but all Vivid Seats are confirmed and they're backed by 100% guarantee. You can trust what you get there. Hey, and right now you can go and enter promo code ESPN25, ESPN25, and get 10% off your next order.
Hello, no one is available to take your call.
Dave, how many years you covered the NBA?
Total. This is season 15, 11 as a beat writer, but 15 total.
Okay, 11 seasons as a beat writer. In those 11 seasons, you have covered three championship teams and seven teams reach the finals. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep, that's
between
right.
the Lakers and Cavs. All right. So you've seen good teams. We are 10 games into the season for most teams. Lakers are the number one defensive team in the league. Still a relatively small sample size, but nonetheless, when I watch them play, even with their schedule not being that great so far, I am extremely impressed by them on defense. I have no idea whether it'll last, but I'm very impressed. Is this sustainable, what they're doing? Is what they're doing going to be the way they're going to play? And if so, are they going to stay up there at the top of the Western Conference standings as we go along?
Well, the things you point to that make sense, that you think that, okay, this will put them in a really great spot come April through June, is top-level talent's there, especially if LeBron continues to play at this level, which is, you know, quite frankly, an uptick from what we've seen in the last several seasons, especially defensively. I mean, at some point through their first seven games, LeBron was ranked in the top 10 in defensive efficiency for individual players, which is, you know, unheard of based on where those things were trending.
For the last 7 or 8 years, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not 7 or 8. Maybe 5.
Right. 5. I mean, that's basically the day-to-day basis since I've covered him. That hasn't been the case on a consistent basis in the regular season. And then you go beyond that and you say the defensive schemes, the defensive numbers, like if they finish anywhere near the top 5 in defense, that puts them historically in a really good group with championship aspirations. The thing that I point to is that, you know, things are kind of razor thin here, though. I spoke to a Western Conference executive last night, Saturday night, and we were talking about the Lakers. And, you know, obviously we're talking about defense efficiency rather than their record. But even when you look at their record, 7-1 looks good, but then you say, oh, they were down 19 in Chicago. 7-1 looks good, but, you know, Dallas should have fouled the Lakers to not allow Danny Green get that shot off on the corner because they had a foul to give.
And there was a horrific missed moving screen, but neither.
Absolutely. Dwight Howard held Seth Curry. So they, and 7-1 looks good, but LeBron James, how can this be sustainable through 82 games? At some point, even though he told me he has no plan to load manage, at some point you figure he sits. And also at some point you figure, you know, for him to be really this amped up in November and he's going to do it for 7 more months in a row, is that possible? And so there's a lot to feel encouraged about so far with this team, but I don't think it's an open and shut case at all in terms of them being a championship favorite.
Bobby, I thought Rob Pelinka, I've criticized Rob Pelinka pretty heavily. I thought the way he put the team together last year, I mean, I guess you could attribute some of that to Magic, some of that to LeBron's input, but, you know, he's the head of the basketball operation, so, I mean, he has to be attached to him. I thought the way he put the team together last year was highly flawed. I thought he gave up way too much for Anthony Davis, and it sort of puts a weight around their ankle, improving going forward. Those two things I stand by. That said, I think the way they put this team together, there was a clear, cohesive vision, the types of players that they wanted to put on this roster this year, once they had Anthony Davis and LeBron in the fold, once they knew what they had, and he did it without having the full array of talent available, because while it was a deep free agent class, a lot of it had come off the board by the time the Lakers got going because they had to wait on Kawhi, which I don't blame them for. I give them credit for putting this team together. Specifically, they got defensive players, and they got players who fit with LeBron, and they got some players who most of them have been paid. They don't have to worry about, you know, some of them maybe not fitting with LeBron because they're worried about getting taken care of. I thought they did a pretty good job putting this roster together. I didn't think it was a championship roster, but I'm watching them play defense and I'm wondering, what are you seeing as you've watched them play?
Well, I think a lot of it that we kind of overlooked a little bit is the coaching staff. And, you know, when Frank Vogel, you know, got hired, we talked about him being kind of like the, you know, the third choice here. You know, it was, either Monty Williams or Ty Lue, or, you know, he was kind of a guy who had been in Orlando, had failed success, but also had really good success in Indiana with those teams there and had a defensive mindset. And then when they added Jason Kidd, it was about, you know, he was kind of the coach in waiting, but we forget how great of a defensive player that Kidd was back in his day when he played in, you know, New Jersey and Dallas there. And then, you know, and then you get out Lionel Hollins, who, you know, from the Memphis days, that defensive minded. So I think a lot of that has to contribute to their, some of their success, right? There.
Yeah. And Phil Handy is also,
and Phil Handy too. Yeah. You're right. But yeah, you're,
the only guy to win a ring the last 2 years, I believe. Is that correct?
I think you are correct.
Or no, he didn't win one. No,
finals the last 5 years.
Last 5 years, yeah, he didn't. Yes. That's right. I'm sorry. The ring one, I brain farted on that. But go ahead, sorry, Bobby.
No, but I think going back to the, you know, we talked about the coach there, but the personnel is that, yeah, I mean, I thought it was not, I don't want to say easy, but when you do an Anthony Davis type deal, when you're basically giving everything, right, except for Kyle Kuzma, my big critique or my question regarding the front office was, all right, now what are you going to do with the rest of the roster, right? Now comes the hard part, especially when you don't get Kawhi, and I thought you saw, you know, July 8th or July 9th, a pretty well executed plan with Danny Green and, you know, for the 2 years, you know, $30 million. And you got fortunate with, you know, Avery Bradley as far as at the room mid level, because of his buyout in Memphis here. And then you just saw, you know, certainly all the other pieces. Rondo has certainly been out. You know, Dwight's been kind of, you know, reinvented here, right? And coming off the bench here. So and of course LeBron and AD are healthy. I mean, we haven't seen any injuries yet to these guys here. So for at least for the first 3 weeks, you know, their record is indicative of kind of the pieces working. And I think we still have a little bit of way to go, but, as you guys know, is that all you need to do is just string along games, win three out of four, don't go on losing streak, and all of a sudden you're going to get some separation here.
Yeah, so Dave, the Clippers, it's pretty clear that they are going to be sitting Kawhi out of back-to-backs. Wouldn't surprise me if they sit Paul George out of some back-to-backs as well. They're willing to take some losses. LeBron made it pretty clear to you. You had a conversation with him and then wrote a story about it. He actually referred to himself in the third person in that story, one of my favorite quotes for LeBron recently. But he said he doesn't want
LeBron
to sit out.
LeBron's healthy, LeBron will play.
I'm only talking about LeBron, which is his way of saying I'm not making judgment on Kawhi. I'm just talking about myself.
Well, interestingly enough, like I'll add on the Kawhi part that, you know, I spoke to someone with the Clippers and they think that he's still basically 2 or 3 weeks away, if not a month away, from being in shape. And so they are entering this season, you know, obviously there was so much attention for them in the offseason and opening night, they beat the Lakers and oh my gosh, they look unstoppable, you know, the first couple games, but they're taking their sweet old time. And if it means dropping some games while Kawhi is being load managed on back-to-backs, that's fine. If it means giving Paul George an extra runway before he takes off, that's fine. And if it means that Kawhi Leonard, they know he won't be even in shape, basketball shape, until, say, December. When, you know,
I think he's in pretty good shape, by the way.
I'm just telling you, this is someone within the Clippers.
No, I know. I'm just saying, He's in pretty good shape. He may not be at the top of his own individual spectrum, but
yeah,
I think he's okay.
Right?
I think he's okay. I think he's playing pretty well.
The best of the best have a higher 1% than the rest, and so
I just remember LeBron basically in a varying series. Like eventually, I just decided, me personally, I would stop asking him about. This is like 3 years ago, because he would just shut you down. He would be basically like, you don't know how I feel. You're not going to count my minutes. I'll worry about my minutes. And he would always talk about how the amount of minutes he would play in a game wasn't as important as how many days he had to play in a season. You know, yep. In other words, don't worry about my minute average, because to me, the whole act of getting ready and recovering from a game is no different whether I play 34 or 41. But then a couple years later, he played 82, games. So, you know, he's always moving the target. He just, you know, at the end of the day, he doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to, I don't know if it's a thing he doesn't want to show weakness or I don't know why, but it's just, it's never been a topic that he wants to embrace.
Well, and he's also framed it when I spoke to him after the game the other night. He said, hey, you remember me and T. Lou getting into it, and Teron Lou getting into it in Cleveland about him wanting me to rest. And I didn't want to rest. And, you know, clearly if it does come to it this season where he's sat out the lineup when he's relatively healthy, it's going to be something that Frank Vogel and Rob Pelinka have to own, versus LeBron, you know, using it as part of his own personal regimen to get ready for the playoffs, because he's made it clear that, you know, hey, it's up to me. I'm out there on the court.
So I remember it was a game, I think his second year in Cleveland. Maybe it was third year in Cleveland after they won the championship. They were playing in Oklahoma City. It was a national TV game. It was the second night of a back-to-back, and Ty Lue had announced the night before that Kevin Love, LeBron, and Kyrie were going to sit that night.
You're close. It was Memphis.
It was in Memphis?
It was in Memphis.
But the game that they were going to sit was in Oklahoma City.
No, the game they were going to sit. No, it was Memphis.
Well, this may have been happened in Memphis too, but I promise you, this game was in Oklahoma City because I was at the game. Mm-hmm. And I think LeBron basically pushed back and was like, no, we want to play in this game. And I remember maybe about an hour and 15 minutes before tip-off, and I'm going to tell you why I know that it happened in Oklahoma City, but I remember walking out on the court to do some TV, and there were these kids there. There were these Cavs fans, and they were like, oh, they said, we're so bummed that LeBron's not going to play. We drove down from Wichita or wherever. And I was like, oh, actually, he is going to play. And it was like one of the best things I've ever had the opportunity to do was to give that family the news that he was going to play, you know. But once it was announced they were going to play, it triggered a massive switch in the lines, and it like caused the betting markets to almost shut down because of how vastly quickly the lines changed, and they suspected like foul play. That's how I know I remember it was Oklahoma City. But
where we're both right, and I jumped the gun on you, so I apologize. There was a game the season after they won the championship where Ty told Kevin, LeBron, and Kyrie to not even bother coming to Memphis on the second night of a back-to-back, and they all stayed rested for load management and didn't even get on the plane to go from Cleveland to Memphis.
Which, in theory, would be a fine today unless the league decides that they're injured, and then it wouldn't be a fine. But then if the Cavs would say that they aren't injured, then it would be a fine. That's what we learned this last week. I'll get a call about that. So speaking of top defensive teams, Bobby, if you take a look at the ratings so far, and again, 10 games in, not significant, but not nothing. There's a couple of teams that have very highly ranked offense and defense, which is one of the things that you look at for a high-level team. One of the teams that ranks up there in the top 7 in both, Milwaukee Bucks. They were a top defensive team last year. They had the MVP. They've played relatively well early in the going this year. So not a surprise. But guess who else is up there, has a top, I think, 7 offense and defense in the early going? The defending champion Toronto Raptors. Who, you know, all due respect to their championship, not a whole lot of people gave them much of a chance to do anything this year. And they have played extraordinarily well out of the gates. And Pascal Siakam got his max contract and has been absolutely spectacular. Dropped 40, I think, on Friday night, 44 or something like that on Friday night. Just a eye-raising start to their season. Fred VanVleet has had a couple of spectacular games. And then they get walloped where they lose Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka on the same night. Bobby, the Raptors, you know, what do you think their outlook is, having seen them now for the first 3-4 weeks of the season?
Well, the two injuries are killers because if you watch this team, there's really no depth to it, right? They basically, Nick Nurse plays eight guys, you know, Van Vliet and Lowry, minutes rank in the top six, overall. I think Lowry's at 36 and Fred is at 37. And now you get Ibaka out with this, with the ankle, and he's averaged 23 minutes. So now you're basically relying on Norm Powell, Gasol, OG, who's been really good. Siakam, as you said, has played at an all NBA level. Van Vliet, Patrick McCall's out too with an injury.
That's right.
And the, as I call them, the band of second chance players, the Stanley Johnson, Rondé Hollis Jefferson, that crew has basically been non-existent here. I mean, right. Hollis Jefferson's played one game and Stanley Johnson's played three games, averaging 3-4 minutes a night. So, it's a thin bench here, Brian. I mean, maybe you'll get something out of, you know, Terrence Davis, their undrafted player who's played a little bit here. Matt Thomas was, you know, playing overseas. But yeah, it's a thin bench where you have seen a lot of Kyle Lowry and Van Vliet here. So now it's kind of, we always say next man up here, but I don't know who that, I don't know who that next man up is when we look at that back end here.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the Nick Nurse give no bleeps a media man early in the season. Like in training camp, he basically just openly rips Stanley Johnson and Rondé Hollis Jefferson. He's like, yeah, they're not defending anywhere near the way we want them to. You know, they're not going to play. It's preposterous. It was like this innocuous question, like, how are your new guys doing? Not good. You know, not good. And then last week, Siakam, I think, fouled out of the first two games he played this year. He's just been in foul trouble all along. And somebody asked Nick about the fouls, and he's like, well, he's committing stupid fouls. So he's got to stop it. And I just love it because, you know, he's speaking the truth. And look, I mean, he's a championship coach. And, you know, Siakam is signed. He doesn't, you know, he's got to have a good relationship with him to a certain extent. And then, by the way, Siakam totally backed him up. Like, he came out and said, yeah, I'm committing stupid fouls. And he, by the way, since that has happened, he's knocked his fouls way down. But I love Nurse, basically saying like what it is. But like, this is really bittersweet, Dave, because I've just been so impressed with the way they've been playing. And I think in real time, both injuries happened in like less than 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And Ibaka, I didn't see an announcement today. They're expected to make an announcement after an MRI, but they're basically saying it's a bad ankle sprain, like weeks and weeks possibly for Ibaka. So, you know, considering that the East is, you know, still somewhat unsure, that was a pretty significant turn of events on a team that is better than I thought.
Yeah, and it's tough because of the players, and Bobby rightfully so gave a shout out to OG Anunoby, who missed their championship run with appendicitis last year, and appendectomy, I should say. And obviously, Pascal's been so good, but those two players, they're not necessarily make up for what Serge and Kyle give you. You know, you don't have the playmaking ability. You know, Pascal's around 4 assists per game, which is, I think, better than a lot of people thought he would be at it when he first entered in this league. But who makes up for that playmaking? And then, you know, neither of those guys are giving you the rim protection and, you know, the steady screen setting and rebounding that Ibaka is. And so, you know, on some level, you're like, okay, it gives a chance for these other guys to take even more of the pie that they didn't have before. But I think it does leave their team, you know, kind of soft at those positions. And, you know, Rachel Nichols reported that we'll get an update on Lowry in 2 weeks. And it's, you know, it's a displaced fracture in the left thumb. And, you know, perhaps that's something he can get heavily wrapped. And he's a right-handed player. And we'll see.
Well, but he played with a thumb injury all last year. And then, most of the season, and then had to have surgery. I think it was on that thumb, that same left thumb. I think it was, after the season. So that's worrisome, you know. Thumbs are something that, you know, that they take a while to heal, and you need them pretty bad. And this, you know, speaking of Eastern Conference teams who are doing really well and who've now had injury setbacks, devastating news on Saturday, for the Celtics. They were in San Antonio, had a nice win, and lost Gordon Hayward to a broken hand. It sounds like he might have surgery on Monday. It wasn't clear. They're going to send him to a specialist, but it sounds like surgery is a possibility. So you're looking at weeks there. Bobby, that's they had been off to a great start at the top of the East standings. They had been without Jaylen Brown for a while, and Kemba Walker started off the season, really shaky. He's been coming on. What I'm saying is they hadn't even been at their best yet, and we're getting to the top, and this is yet another setback for them. So how do you think this affects them?
Well, you're probably going to see a lot of Javonte Green, who was kind of Boston's got a knack of finding these American or even international guys over in Germany, and Green played over there. He's 26 years old, undrafted. Once Hayward went out in the San Antonio game, he came in and played 13 minutes and gave you 6 or 7 points. So you'll probably see Marcus Smart go to the starting lineup, and you'll see a lot of Javonte Green. And you're right. I mean, Hayward, before he got hurt, I mean, he was, 20 points, 8 rebounds, at 44% from three. I mean, we saw the Utah version of, Gordon Hayward here, and, team that's won 7 in a row, and it's got a little bit of a, I don't want to say soft schedule. You've got, Dallas at home, that certainly will be formidable, but you've got Washington, and then you head out west for Golden State, Sac, Phoenix, Clips and Denver here. So, they've given themselves in, especially in the East, when you can get off to a good start like this, and you look at the back end, right? The back end of the standings here, when you've got teams that are 4-5 at 7-8, they've given themselves a little bit of, separation right now to try to withhold, Hayward coming out. But hey, you still have Kemba. You still have, as you said, Jaylen Brown. You got Jason Tatum here. We'll see if Cantor can get back healthy. You still have Marcus Smart. So there's still some good pieces there.
Yeah, I feel like it's a much different injury, Brian, for Hayward than considering what's going on in Toronto. Like, I think that his position, they have more depth there, and they should be able to continue to stack up wins. But obviously, like you fairly mentioned, their schedule hasn't been all that difficult. They've played, that big win against Milwaukee. They played some other tougher opponents, but they've also had some gimmies.
It seems to me like a lot of people just sort of have Philly and Milwaukee as the two teams that are going to have the battle royale to win the East this year. And because of Kyrie's departure, that there was an assumption that Boston would take a step back. I don't know where I see Boston long term. I think Kemba is a spectacular player to have on your team. I really got to know him well and his game well over the summer when I was covering Team USA. I had never watched him that closely in person for that long. But I, my viewpoint on it is, and I think the results in Charlotte bear this out, I think he's a spectacular player to have on your team. And I think, he'll win you individual games here and there, but I don't think he can be your best player, when all the chips are down, because I just think his size limits what he can do. And that's why I thought this season was going to be a lot about Tatum. But, assuming that Hayward recovers from this, Bobby, should we be, after what you've seen, should we be including Boston as a real contender amongst those East teams? Their record speaks to it at this point.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to put them. I guess we tier them, right? We have the tier one, put Philly and Milwaukee in, and Boston, certainly Toronto, maybe even Miami go into that next group here. I don't know if I'm ready to put them up there with those two teams, because as you said, they're, the schedule has been, you opened up with Philly and certainly Toronto, a good win against Toronto, but you had New York twice, you've had Cleveland, you've had Charlotte, you went down to San Antonio and won by 20. So I think you had a little bit of a light schedule, but I think with Boston, what you're finding out is sometimes less is better, right? When you have, as I always say, when there's less mouths to feed, when you've got guys that kind of know their roles a little bit different than last year when maybe you had maybe too much talent, if that sounds funny to say, but you've got, you know, with Jaylen Brown's going to play 30 plus minutes and Jason Tatum, and now you've got Kemba here, and you can shorten your bench a little bit here. I think that's probably a little bit easier for Brad to work with.
Dave, do you see them? Have you been impressed with them at all? Do you see them as a real contender there?
I've been impressed. I can't put them at the same level as Philly because I believe in so much in Joel Embiid in a playoff series being, you know, so tough. And it's Enes Kanter and the Time Lord really going to be the people sustain him or contain him, I should say.
My guess is they're going to have a different center by the playoffs, but who knows? We'll see.
Okay, well, perhaps that would be their solution there. And Milwaukee, you know, Giannis is still so dynamic, more so than the players that I see on Boston, unless Tatum goes back to rookie playoff Tatum, who was a revelation. But they should feel good about what they've done so far. You mentioned them losing Kyrie. We also have them losing Al Horford, been such a staple of their team, and Aaron Baines, who gave them valuable minutes. And so I applaud them for their start. I got to see, you know, continued development, particularly out of Brown and Tatum throughout the next 60 games or 70 games, I guess, before I feel really strongly about their postseason chances.
No Boston love here. Wow. Still, another disappointment for Hayward. He's had like a black cloud over his head since he got to Boston. And I mean, the one thing, you know, I think people forget, Hayward certainly doesn't forget, but you know, he's mentioned all the time, but you know, he had to have a follow-up procedure. You know, that ankle that he had surgery on after the break, it wasn't quite right. He had to have a follow-up procedure, which I assume resulted in some bad luck too. So not only does he have the horrible injury itself, but then it doesn't heal correctly. Has to have a follow-up procedure, which is one of the reasons why he wasn't at his best last year, because he had been set back in his recovery. And now he's finally back with the full year, because not just off the surgery that he, you know, again, the second surgery is what you had to kind of look at. And he's finally back, and then this, you know, unfortunate kind of freak injury happens. You'd think he'd be building up some positive karma at some point. But I'm going to say this. 10 games in, he looked pretty damn good. Bobby, Hayward's got a option in his contract for next year. Knowing what we know about the free agent market being pretty thin, you know, assuming he, you know, recovers and continues to play that way, I wouldn't be surprised if he opts out of that deal. Would you?
I wouldn't. And it's funny, you know, I wrote about, free agents of 2020, I think during the summer, and how lean of a group it was going to be. And I think I had like Hayward like ranked like fourth or fifth on like the small forward, and his agent, Mark Bartlestein, called me and like gave me about it, you know, like in a fun way, but and said like, hey, you're underestimating like Gordon. He's going to have a great year this year. Like we're going to see like the Utah version of Gordon Hayward. And I mean, we've seen it. We saw it in the first, you know, eight games here. And it's interesting that, and I say, when you say opt out, maybe not look for a bigger contract or for as far as at that same number, but, you know, we've seen guys certainly opt out. We saw, I guess, Harrison Barnes do it and maybe take a little bit less, but get some security on the back end here. So, you know, the guys like, Hayward, Andre Drummond, you know, I would say probably unlikely Mike Conley in Utah with that big number there. But yeah, I mean, maybe even who knows what happens in Chicago with Otto Porter. Guys that do have those, you know, $25, $30 million player options. I'm sure we'll think about it as far as what to do.
Yeah, that's something to watch for sure. So Hayward off to a great start, unfortunately, derailed. All right, well, thank you very much, guys. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Dave, for spending some time with us. Thanks for listening. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you soon.